In this eighth section, the Buddha teaches us that we must not do bad deeds, that we must not harm people, because to harm others is just to harm oneself. If you slight others, you only slight yourself. If you are bad to others, it's the same as being bad to yourself. The Buddha said, an evil person who harms a sage is like one who raises his head and spits at heaven. Instead of reaching heaven, the spittle falls back on him. An evil person refers to someone who does bad deeds of every kind, while a sage is a worthy and virtuous person. When an evil person who has no virtue tries to harm a sage who has genuine virtue, it's as if he were tipping back his head to spit at the sky. The spit doesn't reach the sky, but instead falls back on his own face. This is to say that an evil person is really unable to harm a sage. He may think of a way to harm him, but in the end, he's still actually harming himself. In this world, there are underlying principles of justice which govern all things and which make it wrong to harm people. It is the same with someone who throws dust against the wind. Instead of going somewhere else, the dust returns to defile his own body. If you face the wind and toss out a handful of dust, instead of flying forward, it will fly back to you and fall on your own body. The sage cannot be harmed. Misdeeds will inevitably destroy the doer. You can't slander a sage or really harm him because the misfortune which results happens to you. It's you who will have to undergo the retribution. Section 9. By returning to the source, you find the way. The Buddha said, deep learning and an appreciation of the way make the way difficult to attain. When you guard your mind and revere the way is truly great. In this ninth section, the Buddha is teaching cultivators to hear the Dharma and to contemplate it, to contemplate the Dharma and to cultivate it, to cultivate the Dharma and then to realize it. Cultivators should not only be able to discuss or to listen to the Buddha Dharma without being able to put it into practice. It only counts when you can actually go and do it. The Buddha said, deep learning and an appreciation of the way make the way difficult to attain. Deep learning here refers to being well-read. Ananda, for instance, was foremost in learning. He could be called deeply learned. But someone who has only studied the Dharma and has not contemplated it, as it is taught, will never be able to understand the principles. He relies on only rote memory and intellectual ability. Even if he has a sharp memory and can memorize a sutra, he won't get any response. If he fails to contemplate the meaning and fails to cultivate according to it, it will ultimately be of no use to him. Appreciation of the way refers to cultivators who know that the way is really excellent, but who don't realize that originally the way is just their own mind. It is not apart from their own mind. Those people go searching outside their mind for another way. Although they long for and cherish the way, yet if they seek outside, they will go wrong. That makes the way difficult to obtain. By seeking outside, they will not understand the way, nor will they be able to encounter it. Since they won't encounter it, even less will they understand the way. The longer they run, the farther away they will get. When you guard your mind and revere the way is truly great. What does it mean to guard your mind? To guard your mind means to guard it from indulging in false thinking. It means not to seek outside. It is said, look within yourself. Don't seek from other people. Seek within. Don't seek without. Seek within. In thought after thought, you must awaken. In thought after thought, you must understand. In thought after thought, you must aspire toward the Bodhi mind. Having no thoughts of seeking fame or benefits is to guard one's mind. What does it mean to revere the way? It means to respectfully uphold the way, never allowing it to be absent from your thoughts, and to comprehend the source of your mind in thought after thought. You merge with the essence of the mind, and you do not seek outside for it. That's called revering the way. Then the way is truly great. If you cultivate like that, quite naturally your accomplishment will be great. Section 10. Joyful charity brings blessings. The Buddha said, when you see someone who is practicing giving, aid him joyfully, and you will obtain vast and great blessings. A Shramana answered, is there an end to those blessings? The Buddha said, consider the flame of a single torch. Though hundreds of thousands of people come to light their own torches from it so that they can cook their food and ward off darkness, the first torch remains the same. Blessings, too, are like this. This 10th section expounds the merit and virtue of joyfully supporting others. You can gain benefits, and so do others, and the blessings you create have no end. The Buddha said, when you see someone who is practicing giving, aid him joyfully. There are three types of giving. The first is the giving of wealth, which is also called giving that sustains life. This refers to the giving of two kinds of material wealth, inner wealth and outer wealth. Inner wealth refers to the head, eyes, brains, marrow, skin, blood, flesh, tendons, and bones. This is the inner wealth of the body. Outer wealth refers to gold, silver, precious gems, countries, cities, wives, and children. If you have gold, you can give people gold. If you have silver, you can give people silver. If you have jewels, you can give them to others. If you have a country or a city, you can relinquish it to others. If you have a wife, you can give her away. If you have a child, you can give him or her away. This is outward giving. As for inner giving, you can give away your head, eyes, brains, bone marrow, skin, blood, flesh, and bones. The above constitutes the giving of wealth. The second kind of giving is the giving of Dharma. The gift of Dharma refers to explaining the threefold study of precepts, samadhi, and wisdom. You give all these various kinds of Dharma to people so that they gain benefit. The third kind of giving is the giving of courage. When someone undergoes a catastrophe or a frightening experience, you can dispel their anxiety and alleviate their distress. That's what's meant by giving courage. And when you see someone practicing giving and you support him joyfully, praising and rejoicing in what he's doing, you will obtain vast and great blessings. Your reward of blessings will be immense. Foolish people may say, well, if I do some charitable act and others amass vast blessings by following along and supporting me, won't that diminish my own reward of blessings? Anticipating that foolish people might reason that way, there follows a dialogue to this point. A shramana asks, is there an end to those blessings? He's asking, will the blessings disappear? That is to say, the person who originally did the giving obtained blessings. When others rejoice in his deed, they also obtain blessings. Will the first person be able to keep his blessings, or will they be snatched away by the others? The Buddha said, consider the flame of a single torch. Though hundreds of thousands of people come to light their own torches from it so that they can cook their food and ward off darkness, the first torch remains the same. Although there is only one flame, 100,000 people all come and use the flame to light their fires. They share the fire and use it to cook their food and dispel the darkness. Still, the flame of the original torch remains as it was in the beginning. It won't go out. Blessings, too, are like this. The reward of blessings is also like this. The analogy explains that someone who cultivates the way by practicing giving can realize the fruition in the future. Cooking the food is analogous to realizing the fruition of one's cultivation. Warding off the darkness is analogous to warding off the delusions caused by the threefold obstacles, the obstacle of karma, the obstacle of retribution, and the obstacle of afflictions. What is being said is that the merit and virtue of your acts of giving will enable you and others to realize the fruition of the way. You will be able to wipe out the three obstacles, and other people who joyfully support you will also be able to purge them. This merit and virtue will be shared by all alike. Section 11. The increase in merit gained by bestowing food. The Buddha said, giving food to 100 bad people is not as good as giving food to a single good person. Giving food to 1,000 good people is not as good as giving food to one person who holds the five precepts. Giving food to 10,000 people who hold the five precepts is not as good as giving food to a single Shrotaapanna. Giving food to 1,000,000 Shrotaapannas is not as good as giving food to a single Sakkardagaman. Giving food to 10,000,000 Sakkardagamans is not as good as giving food to a single Anagaman. Giving food to 100,000,000 Anagamans is not as good as giving food to a single Arhat. Giving food to 1,000,000,000 Arhats is not as good as giving food to a single Pratyeka Buddha. Giving food to 10,000,000,000 Pratyeka Buddhas is not as good as giving food to a Buddha of the three periods of time. Giving food to 100,000,000,000 Buddhas of the three periods of time is not as good as giving food to a single person who is without thoughts, without dwelling, without cultivation, and without accomplishment. The 11th section of the sutra compares the superior and inferior fields of blessings and lets people understand the superior and inferior aspects of making offerings. The Buddha said, giving food to 100 bad people is not as good as giving food to a single good person. The previous section discussed giving in general terms, but when one gives, the important thing is to know how to do it. If you plant blessings, but you don't know the right method, if you don't plant in accord with Dharma, then you won't get any blessings. So the text says that giving food to one good person plants a greater field of blessings than giving to 100 evil people. Why? Because after you feed 100 bad people, all they can do are evil deeds. You become an accomplice to the bad things that they do because you help them do their evil deeds. If you give food to even one good person, then the good things he does after he's eaten his fill are deeds that, you could say, you helped him accomplish. That is why it doesn't equal giving food to a single good person. Giving food to 1,000 good people is not as good as giving food to one person who holds the five precepts. Food here implies every kind of offering, food, drink, jewels, money, even your head, your eyes, your brains, and your marrow. If you give your life's energy to help people do good things, then the good deeds they do are done with your help. But if you give your life's energy in order to help bad people, you actually create offenses. Therefore, the merit and virtue of feeding 1,000 good people is not as great as that which accrues from giving to even one person who holds the five precepts. Giving food to 10,000 people who hold the five precepts is not as good as giving food to a single Shrotaapanna. People who hold the five precepts here refers to people who have taken refuge with the Triple Jewel, who hold the five precepts, and who cultivate the 10 good deeds. The merit and virtue of giving food to 1,000 people who hold the five precepts is not as great as that of making an offering of food to a single Shrotaapanna, a sage of the first fruition. giving food to a million Shrotapannas is not as good as giving food to a single Sakardagaman. Giving food to a million Shrotapannas, sages of the first fruition, wouldn't be as good as giving food to a sage of the second fruition, a Sakardagaman, because those of the first fruition do not know the state of those of the second fruition. Sages of the first fruition have already broken through delusion in views. Those of the second fruition have also cut off 6 grades of delusion in thought, in the desire realm. This was discussed in a previous section. Therefore, making an offering of food to a Sakardagaman of the second fruition has more merit and virtue than making an offering to a Shrotapanna of the first fruition. Giving food to 10 million Sakardagamans is not as good as giving food to a single Anagaman. Giving food to 10 million sages of the second fruition who have cut off 6 grades of delusion of thought in the desire realm would not be as good as giving food to a single Anagaman, a sage of the third fruition. An Anagaman has cut off all 9 grades of delusion of thought in the desire realm. Giving food to 100 million Anagamans is not as good as giving food to a single Arhat. Making an offering of food to 100 million Anagamans of the third fruition does not have as much merit and virtue as making an offering to one Arhat. Giving food to 1 billion Arhats is not as good as giving food to a single Prateka Buddha. Arhats are called sound hearers because they hear the sound of the Buddha's voice and awaken to the way. A Prateka Buddha is one who has been enlightened by conditions. When a Buddha is in the world, Prateka Buddhas contemplate the 12 conditioned links of causation and awaken to the way. When there is no Buddha in the world, they are called solitarily enlightened ones because they awaken to the way through contemplation of the illusory transformations and the impermanent nature of the myriad phenomena. If you can give food to 1 billion Arhats, it is not as good as giving food to a single Prateka Buddha. Giving food to 10 billion Prateka Buddhas is not as good as giving food to a Buddha of the 3 periods of time. If you make offerings to any Buddha, whether of the past, present, or future, the merit and virtue is much greater than giving to that many Prateka Buddhas. But giving food to 100 billion Buddhas of the 3 periods of time is not as good as giving food to a single one who is without thoughts, without dwelling, without cultivation, and without accomplishment. It would not be as good as making an offering to a sage who is without thoughts, without dwelling, without cultivation, and without accomplishment. Without thought means thinking and yet not thinking. Without dwelling means dwelling and yet not dwelling. One cultivates and yet does not cultivate. One becomes accomplished and yet does not become accomplished. One, like this, reaches the level of the initial stage of the perfect teaching. He is known as a great knight who realizes the Dharma body. Such beings manifest the eight signs of realizing the way and are able to accomplish Buddhahood in 100 worlds. We should realize the various principles involved in making offerings and the advantages of making offerings to each particular type of individual. Therefore, we should draw near to good and wise advisors. If you draw near to evil advisors instead, you will learn their deviant knowledge and viewpoints. If you keep company with good and wise advisors, you will learn right knowledge and viewpoints. If you make offerings to evil people, you are committing offenses. If you make offerings to good people, then you create merit and virtue. This is something that we should all know. Section 12. A List of Difficulties and an Exhortation to Cultivate. The Buddha said, "People encounter 20 different kinds of difficulties. It is difficult to give when one is poor. It is difficult to study the way when one has wealth and status. It is difficult to abandon life and face the certainty of death. It is difficult to encounter the Buddhist sutras. It is difficult to be born at the time of a Buddha. It is difficult to be patient with lust and desire. It is difficult to see fine things and not seek them. It is difficult to be insulted and not become angry. It is difficult to have power and not abuse it. It is difficult to come in contact with things and have no thought of them. It is difficult to be vastly learned and well-read. It is difficult to get rid of pride. It is difficult not to slight those who have not yet studied. It is difficult to practice equanimity of mind. It is difficult not to gossip. It is difficult to meet a good and wise advisor. It is difficult to see one's own nature and study the way. It is difficult to teach and save people according to their potentials. It is difficult to see a state and not be moved by it. It is difficult to have a good understanding of skill and means." The Buddha said, "People encounter 20 different kinds of difficulties. All people have 20 kinds of difficulties. Difficulties are things that are not easy. Easy things are not difficult. Things that are not easy are adversities. Adverse states are not easily understood or recognized. Easy things are convenient. Convenience makes people feel better about them. The 20 items on this list are all hard to accomplish. The first difficulty is that it is difficult to give when one is poor. If you have money and you want to give, it's easy, because if you give a little money, it doesn't count for much. But if you don't have anything to give and yet you still can give, that is genuine giving. What counts is to do things that can't be done. Anybody can do what's possible, and there's no particular value in doing what anybody can do. An outstanding person does what others cannot do. He surpasses everyone else. This person transcends the common lot. Speaking of the difficulty of giving when one is poor, there is a story that illustrates this truth. When Shakyamuni Buddha was living in the world, there was a very poor person. Now, although he was poor, he still had a wife. This couple had each other, but their lives were very difficult. They had only a little hut to live in. They had nothing to eat and no clothes to wear. Being so poor, they had to beg for their food every day out on the streets. Begging isn't that difficult a thing, but what made it hard was that the couple had no clothes to wear. All they had was one pair of pants. How could two people wear one pair of pants? They could only take turns. One day the husband would wear the pants and go out begging for food and bring it back to share with his wife. The next day, the wife would go out wearing that pair of pants. Her husband, left at home, had no pants to wear. The one who went out to beg would wear the pants and bring back the food for the two of them to eat. In this way, they were able to sustain themselves day by day. Alas, you might say they were about as poor as could be. At that time, there was a Pratyeka Buddha. And as mentioned before, Pratyeka Buddhas have the spiritual power of knowing past lives. He took a look at their situation and saw that the couple was not able to give in past lives, and that's why they were so poor that they only owned one pair of pants in this life. The Pratyeka Buddha thought, I must try to take these two people across. He made a vow to take them across by helping them plant seeds of blessings. So the Pratyeka Buddha went begging at the couple's house. He looked like a bhikshu as he stood there with his bowl in his hand seeking alms. The couple saw the monk seeking alms, but they didn't have any food or drink to give him, and all they had in the way of clothing was their one pair of pants. The husband said to his wife, "We ought to do a little giving and seek some blessings. Why do you think we're so poor? It's because we couldn't give in the past. We should give now." The wife said, "Give? Well, what do we have to give?" The husband said, "Well, we still have a pair of pants. We could give that pair of pants to this bhikshu." The wife lost her temper at that. "You're really an idiot. We've only got one pair of pants, which we take turns wearing. If we give it to that bhikshu, we will lose our only means of going out to beg. With this one pair of pants that we are taking turns wearing, we can still go begging for food. If we were to give it away, how could we go out?" The husband exhorted his wife, "That's true. It's not at all easy, but we shouldn't take ourselves into account. We should just give the pants to the bhikshu. And if the two of us can't go out and beg, we'll stay here and starve to death. Why worry so much about it? You see, the bhikshu isn't leaving." His wife, after hearing him out, sighed and said, "Okay, if you want to give, then give." So this is what they did. They stuck their only pair of pants out the window and handed it to the bhikshu. The bhikshu, who had reached the fruition of a Pratyeka Buddha, took the pants to where Shakyamuni Buddha was and offered the pants to him. He then explained, "I just received this pair of pants from a poor household. It was all they had in the house, and they gave it to me." Shakyamuni Buddha took the pair of pants and said to everyone, "Here is a case of great merit and virtue. A poor couple had nothing but a pair of pants in the house, and they were able to give it as an offering to this bhikshu, who is in fact a Pratyeka Buddha. They will reap limitlessly great blessings in the future." The king of the country was in Shakyamuni Buddha's Dharma assembly at the time. When he heard that there were people in his own country so poor that they had no clothes to wear and no food to eat, while in his palace he himself ate so well and dressed so elegantly, he felt ashamed to face his citizens. In his shame, the king sent people to that poor household, bearing rice, flour, and lots of food and clothes. The couple immediately received a reward for giving up their pair of pants. They had given their one pair of pants, and now they got everything they wanted. Later on, they went to see the Buddha. The Buddha spoke Dharma for them, and as soon as he did, the two of them immediately reached the first stage of arhatship. Therefore, it is difficult to give when one is poor. If you can give when you are in difficulty, that is really a true mind of giving. And if when giving, the more difficult it is, the more you are able to do it, then the more value it has. For example, you can't stand to be scolded. However, if people scold you and you can endure it, then you have virtuous conduct. Or, if you can't stand being hit, but when someone hits you, you bear it and look at it like this, "Oh, this is my good and wise advisor who has come to help me eradicate my offenses and leave the sea of suffering. This is a rare, good, and wise advisor." No matter what kind of state arises, you should recognize it clearly. People who criticize you are truly your good and wise advisors. It shouldn't be that when people praise you, you're like a child who gets some candy and becomes overjoyed, but when you get slandered, it tastes as bitter as bile. That's not the way it should be. The Buddha named 20 kinds of difficulties. Actually, in human existence, there are many more than that. To be able to easily resolve difficulties when they come shows a true understanding of the Buddha Dharma. It is difficult to study the way when one has wealth and status. Wealth means you are rich. Status means you have power and influence. If someone is rich and honored, then of course his life is pleasant. It certainly isn't as difficult as it was for the couple that I just spoke of, who owned nothing but a pair of pants. A wealthy person will have clothes to wear and money to spend. He will also have eminent relatives and renowned friends. Right then, if you were to tell him to cultivate and work hard, to leave the home life and study the way, he would find it difficult to do. Why? Because he has everything he wants and he's happy with what he has. He's very carefree. His house is like the emperor's palace, and he dines on the best gourmet food and on expensive dishes that most people can't afford. So it's not easy to convince him to cultivate. It is difficult to abandon life and face the certainty of death. To abandon life means you don't want to live. However, even if you don't want to live, you may not be able to die. For instance, some people may want to commit suicide, so they take sleeping pills, but they don't take enough, and they survive. You might prefer to die and not necessarily be able to do so. If it were the case that, whenever you felt you had had enough of living, you could definitely die, then there would be no difficulty here. There is another way to explain this. If you don't want to live, you can certainly die. But even if you want to live, and you employ every possible means to prolong your life and avoid death, you cannot succeed. Eventually, everyone has to die. There isn't anyone who will live forever and never grow old. No one can live forever and never die. Therefore, the Buddha says that it is difficult to abandon life and face the certainty of death. It is difficult to encounter the Buddhist sutras. All of you should not think that it's easy to get to hear lectures on the sutras or to read the sutras. It's not easy at all. The unsurpassed, subtle, wonderful Dharma is difficult to encounter in millions of aeons. Now that I can see and hear it, accept and uphold it, I vow to understand the Tathagata's true and actual meaning. Think it over. It's not easy to encounter Buddhist sutras, much less to obtain a human body. And yet, in this life, we have obtained a human body, we have encountered Buddhist sutras, and we can listen to people lecture on them. This, too, is not easy. It is the result of our having planted good roots throughout limitless aeons in the past. It is difficult to be born at the time of a Buddha. This is also not easy. Although the Buddha has entered Nirvana, the Buddha Dharma still remains, so we can still study Buddhism and cultivate. This is very fortunate. It is difficult to be patient with lust and desire. Lust and desire refer to the emotional love and desire between men and women. That kind of love and desire is not easy to bear because ordinary people feel it is biologically natural for men and women to get married. It is not easy to endure the feelings of love and desire, to have the strength of patience to not be turned by emotional states. You may be patient once and patient twice, then you can't be patient anymore, and so you are turned upside down. Therefore, it is not easy to be patient with lust and desire. It is difficult to see fine things and not seek them. Everybody who sees something fine wants to own it and feels greed for it. To see something good and not be greedy for it is quite difficult. It is difficult to be insulted and not become angry. For instance, someone may suddenly hit you, scold you, or insult you for no reason whatsoever. If he maltreats you and puts you down, it is truly difficult not to get angry, to remain calm as if nothing happened. If you can do that, then you're someone who has already walked the road to its end. You pass. It is difficult to have power and not abuse it. An example of a powerful person is a government official who decides he'd like to kill someone and goes ahead and does it. He uses his authority to oppress people. He uses his power to execute people, even when they are innocent. If he has this kind of power and he casually kills people, that's an abuse of power. If he has power yet still respects people, and therefore he doesn't casually kill or oppress them, then he is not abusing power. That's not easy. Nevertheless, if he can avoid abusing his power, that is the very best. It is difficult to come in contact with things and have no thought of them. No matter what you encounter, you just go ahead and deal with it without a